Hello, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick, Vatican Radio. On the 19th of April, the TEDx conference, sponsored by the Pontifical Council for Culture, focusing on religious freedom, took place here in the Vatican. Among the speakers at this conference was world-renowned US-based architect, artist, and set designer, Daniel Libeskind. I asked him about the importance in today's world of the theme of this conference and whether he feels a special responsibility towards humanity as one of the key players in the world of architecture in terms of building bridges between peoples. In this interview, Daniel Libeskind also speaks about the project of the World Trade Center in Lower Manhattan and announces an all-new project, that of a peace-building and conflict resolution center at the Mays Prison in Belfast, Northern Ireland. Speaking to Daniel Libeskind, I don't have to introduce him very much because he's very famous. He's an architect, an artist, and a set designer as well. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. It is correct, yes.
You're here in Rome at the moment to attend a TEDx conference focusing on religious freedom. Were you surprised when you were asked to speak at this conference, which is being held in the Vatican?
Well, I think I was honored. I think it's a conference which deals with a theme that is so important in the world today: religious freedom, the ability to be tolerant, the ability to see that the world is not just driven by violence and by denigration of the individual, but by liberty. What could be more important in our time than this topic?
I know you're of Jewish-Polish descent. How does that personal history play into this?
Well, I think greatly. My parents were both Holocaust survivors. I grew up under communism in Poland until we were able to leave. So to me, it's not an abstract. It's not a story that I read about and researched in books. It's something that I experienced, what it means, what genocides mean, what totalitarianism means. I don't take liberty for granted, as many people do. I think it's something we have to strive for every day, and we have to be conscious of all the forces in the world that are here.
Do you feel a special responsibility as one of the key players in architecture and in the art world, in a sense, in terms of building bridges between peoples?
I think every architect should be a bridge builder between peoples. I think architecture is about a shared social space. It's about creating a space that people can be together. It's the greatest vehicle for communicating the fact that humanity is at one in this world. Of course, I think every piece of architecture has to deal with something which is positive. As I often said, this is the only profession, architecture, where pessimists are not required, because you can be pessimist almost in any other field. As a politician, as an economist, as a general, even a musical composer or a writer. But you can never be a pessimist as an architect, because architecture always lays foundations for a better future. And that is why architecture is so deeply implicated in faith, because you have to believe in something in order to build it.
Do you draw inspiration from sacred architecture at all?
Absolutely. I think it's hard to even divide, so to speak, sacred and secular, because in some way the divinity of light, the world, it's not just a practical and materialistic entity. We are all implicated in something which is greater than ourselves. So I think architects throughout history have always delved into things that go beyond just the world of function, the world of utility, the world of us. It is always informed by light, by proportion, by what is the idea of material? What is the world about? What are the questions that the world raises towards us and towards the way we live?
You talk about this contact with the real world. Architects are artists, so they speak about wonder and about beauty. It's difficult to find a link there between reality and wonder, no?
No, I think if you lose the sense that reality is wondrous, you will just build commodities and things that really are hollow. I think one has to reassert in every project, however modest, however small, the wondrous nature of the world, the wondrous nature of where we are and why we are and where we are looking and the horizons that are here. It's something truly inspiring.
When you went to the Sistine Chapel, invited by Pope Benedict, I think it was 2009, with a group of other artists, He asked you to be custodians of beauty. Is that difficult?
Well, it's a fantastic mission. But to be a custodian of beauty, that's true, because those words like beauty and truth and good and the good are not hollow words. They have become maybe cliches, and maybe most people don't even believe in them. But I do believe them. There are beautiful spaces. Architecture without beauty would not be architecture, and without truth and goodness, what would we be doing here? Nothing.
So there's a spiritual side to your inspiration. Where do you draw that inspiration from?
I think architecture, despite its heaviness, despite the fact that it's made out of very heavy materials, is a spiritual art. There's no doubt about it. It has always been a spiritual art, because to build is to assert a spirit of the world, a spirit of what is beyond. There is no dividing line between what people call secular and sacred today, because every worker, every person who contributes to the city is involved in something greater than themselves. So I always considered the city itself as the grandest of works of art, because it's created by so many people, mostly anonymous, and across such a great distance of time as well, not only today, but we are standing on the shoulders of giants of the past. So yes, we are implicated in something much more fantastic than many people are aware of.
You talk about standing on the shoulders of artists and architects from the past. In this city, it's very visible, in the city of Rome. What's your favorite building here?
God, it is. To find a favorite building in Rome would be like saying, what's your favorite color? I would say the rainbow. And the same thing is true for Rome. Rome is a rainbow of architecture, from its great social spaces, you know, from the Piazza Navona around the corner to the Piazza di Spagna, to great fountains, to the great streets of Rome, to the great buildings that contribute a dignity of based on the human scale, and also connect us to something beyond the human world, to something worth thinking about and wondering about. I think, look, we are just about a minute from one of my favorite buildings by Borromini, San Ivo, which is perhaps one of the greatest exercises in creating a geometric equivalent to a spiritual world made in prosaic materials. So, yes, Rome is an ever-present inspiration.
It's corkscrew dome, no?
Yes. Well, it's beyond it. It's an invention of a way of calculating that goes beyond even mathematics, that deals with light itself. And it's a transcendent building.
The Pantheon is considered to be an architectural wonder, the first architectural wonder. Is that so?
Well, it is. Whenever you have such boldness as that amazing building, which has given birth to so many other buildings. But Rome is so lucky because, look, without the organization of Rome by Pope Sixtus, with the obelisk, with organizing a city according to points of interest and points of ritual, what would other cities be? So Rome is a lesson in architecture and city planning.
It's a layered city as well. If you were asked to build a church in the Vatican, would you accept?
Oh, I'd love to. You know, I've always wanted to build a church, a synagogue, or a mosque. Once I was even almost close to building a synagogue and a mosque, but I didn't succeed. But yeah, I'd love to build a church, of course.
You have built, though, a lot of Holocaust memorials, haven't you?
I have built the Jewish Museum in Berlin. I have built the Danish Jewish Museum, which deals with a totally different story of Danish Jews and the fact that they were saved by their countrymen. So it's a story that has a really positive sense of the spirit during a very, very dark period of total darkness, which is the Holocaust. Of course, I've been involved in a number of projects, but I've also been involved in many other kinds of projects with different religions and with different countries.
Can you mention Ground Zero at all?
Well, Ground Zero is a hugely important project, because that is a project that is not about a museum or a single building, but about shaping a new neighborhood after such a catastrophe. And it's not just about shaping it in some simply physical and functional sense, which it has to be as well, but creating a sense of what it means to create foundations of memory, which are at the same time foundations for liberty and freedom. And in that project, which is ongoing, which is a vast project, one of the largest in the world, I really created something very unique, based on social space, based on creating a sacred space in the center of a, you know, piece of real estate. Nothing sacred has been declared. And most of my great colleagues, architects, built in the center of this site large buildings. But I decided after, because I started with the families of victims, never to build where people perished. that even though it was part of the competition, I decided this should be something very special. Should be where we have a park, where we have the footprints, the waterfalls, which screen the sight, the sounds of busy streets of New York and give intimacy to experience. And not just on the surface of the street, but all the way 75 feet down to bedrock, which will be the museum itself, so that we can feel the impact and the sense of where the slurry wall, that great foundation, which is the dam between the Hudson River and the rest of New York, had it collapsed, all of the New York subways would have been flooded. So I created really a new sense of the center of Lower Manhattan, of Manhattan. And then I created emblematic buildings. The buildings really are shaped around that site so that there's sun and light on the site. And buildings from the Tower Number 1, Freedom Tower, symbolic, 1776, date of the Declaration of Independence, really form a torch in a spiral formation that refers to what I saw when I immigrated to New York, the Torch of Liberty, just at the south, standing south of the site, which is inscribed, you know, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled messes yearning to be free. It's about the immigrants, about New Yorkers, it's about the people from all over the world who come poor, uneducated to the city. And I created some other specialized devices. I created a new public space called the Wedge of Light, which especially incorporates St. Paul's Church. St. Paul's Church, which was so important in the first efforts when the site was totally devastated, became an emblematic and practical center point of emergency help. I incorporated into the Wedge of Light, which is determined by two angles of light, 8:46, September 11th, when the first tower was struck, and 10:28 a.m. when the second tower collapsed. That's shaped in light and includes, of course, St. Paul's Church, which is one of the oldest churches in New York, and it's the church where George Washington and the founders of the country came to pray in after being inaugurated as the first president right at the Federal Center a few blocks from this building. So the site is full of meaning, and you have to remember that the site is between Church Street, Liberty Street. Those two words, how amazing. In New York, we have the sense of togetherness. And that's rebuilding of New York is not rebuilding just some buildings, but really a new neighborhood.
I would like to ask you what your next venture is, what your latest venture is.
Well, my latest venture was just announced today, which is the building of the Peace Building and Conflict Resolution Center at the Mays Prison in Belfast, Northern Ireland, where we've seen so much pain in the Protestant-Catholic divide, and to build something that brings people together, that gives the individual stories, that brings something good to a place that had so much darkness and pain. That's a great new project.
What drives you from an aesthetic point of view? Would it be more the wonder of beauty or the torment of the soul?
I don't think you can divide beauty from the torment of the soul, as you put it. I think the soul is a complex entity, and because you use the word soul, I think it's right. It's not, we don't only build for the eyes, we don't only build aesthetically for the sense of the external iconography, but for the deeper sense of the heart, which is implicated in every building. It's not just an intellectual experience. Beauty is not an intellectual experience only. It's a deep spiritual experience, and therefore everything that has to do with human beings must go into it, including pain and suffering and the abyss that has been created by catastrophic murders. It's also part of the soul.
What artists have inspired you? I can see, for example, myself looking at some of your works, I can see, for example, Braque. Is that true, or is it just my idea?
No, I love the work of Braque. You're a very perceptive person. I love the work of Braque. I love the work of the early modern artists who created a really almost a new language, which incorporates tradition but moves it forward to another dimension. But certainly I'm inspired by artists of all sorts and in all fields and also across the world, not only in Western art, but I'm inspired by, you know, Asian art, African art. We're so lucky to be able to have access to the world and learn so much from the extraordinary achievements of artists, musicians, composers, writers, filmmakers, poets, mathematicians and astronomers. So yeah, it's a wondrous world.
And our thanks there go to US-based architect, artist and set designer Daniel Libeskind. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.